Some preschoolers were given a test concerning food. Half of the test involved eating food which had been obviously packaged from McDonald's. The other half of the test involved eating the exact same food. But the second half of the test, they packaged that food in plain packaging. The children were then asked to evaluate the two food samples. The testers wanted to know if the children thought that the food tasted the same from the McDonald's packaging and the plain packaging, and they didn't tell them it was the same food, or if one was better than the other. Every single time, without exception, the kids said that the food from the plain packaging received or deserved a worse rating. And as you look at this test, I was amazed that they said even the apple juice tasted better from McDonald's. The carrots tasted better. And certainly the milk from McDonald's tasted better than that stuff which was wrapped in the plain box. Now, I'll give you that information to make this point. If changing the packaging when it comes to physical food can have an impact on people, what about in the spiritual realm? You would think if it's true here, it would also be true in the other realm. Last Sunday, if you were here, we had on the Sunday evening that we were together a study on food. That lesson involved literal food. The Bible has a lot to say about literal food. But tonight we want to consider the second half of that lesson, and that is spiritual food. If we look at the Bible, we find oftentimes that there is a lot of information, Old Testament and New, concerning spiritual food. One of the verses that deals with this is in the Old Testament back in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 55 and verse 1. This verse not only deals with food, it is a very unusual verse. In fact, as you read it, you might want to scratch your head a little bit and say, I wonder what that means. What was the prophet talking about? In Isaiah 55, verse 1, God's prophet referred to those who would be hungry and thirsty. Well, that in and of itself is probably not too odd. But the prophet goes on to say, if you're hungry or if you're thirsty, free food, free drink is going to be available. Well, we probably are not too puzzled by that either, because sometimes there is free food and sometimes there is free drink. But there's more to the passage, which is where things get a little peculiar. The ASV translates the thought this way. Ho! In other words, let me get your attention. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. And he that has no money. Huh, that's unusual. The guy that doesn't have any money, come. You come, and even though you don't have any money, what are you going to do? You're going to buy. Buy and eat. Yea, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Now, how can a person buy food and beverage if they don't have any money? That would seem to be contradictory. If a skeptic were reading through this section of the Old Testament, he or she might say, well, that's foolishness, that's nonsense, and that's why we don't believe in the Bible. But if a person were to be more reflective, he or she might say, well, let's see if there's a little more to Isaiah's point. And if that were done, they might come to realize that the point is not literal. As you look at Isaiah 55 and verse 1, the prophet was pointing forward to the New Testament era. He was talking about the water of life. He was talking about that living water that Jesus spoke of in John chapter 4. Most understand the need for physical food, and as they go through their daily lives, they pay a lot of attention to it. Before leaving the building this morning, I was part of a conversation, did more listening than talking, but I was part of a conversation where people were talking about reading food labels. Now, you may do that a little, you may do that a lot, but there's some people, you can see it in the home, you can maybe see it in the grocery store. But there are people who will read that food label very carefully to ensure that what they're putting into their bodies meets the criteria that they want to live by. Other people, as they go to the store, they look for certain items on the food label. They may want it to say real, or they may want it to say healthy, or they might want it to say pure. And perhaps as we go to the grocery store, we are very careful. We read those labels, we check things out, we ask questions before we buy food for ourselves and our families. The food that we eat gets a lot of attention. It's labeled. People use those labels. Sometimes, because food receives so much attention, it might be waxed if we're over there in the fruit aisle. And it's often sealed. Our desire for food is so great. If you've never thought about it in these terms, our desire for food is so great that sometimes food costs people their lives. There are some people who die, sometimes to produce food for us. In fact, a fair number of lives are lost with various kinds of foods. The example that I want to set forth is the Bering Sea. Maybe you've had a chance to watch that program where they go out and they're after seafood. According to what I know and read, the Bering Sea, for the people who are out there on that body of water, there's an average of one death a week when it's fishing season. Did you know that? One person a week on a boat dies because people want their seafood. Now, you might think that if people were made aware of that, there'd be that great outcry. We don't want any more of the seafood. Not if it's costing people their lives. But that's not what we hear. Why not? Because people want what those guys go out and get. We are so interested in food that even though people lose their lives, we say, well, you know, as long as you're willing to go out and get it, we'll continue to pay for it. We'll continue to eat it. While the Lord was on the earth, he ate food. He saw food in various places, at various times, and with various people. And Jesus, as he went through those earthly years, he knew that food was very, very important to people. In fact, think about a passage which is familiar to us. Luke chapter 16. Now, that's that place where we have some information about the rich man and Lazarus, and sometimes we talk about the Hadean realm. But as you look at Luke chapter 16, there's also a detail or two in there about food. You may remember from Luke chapter 16, verse 19, I believe it is, that the rich man fared sumptuously. Not only did this man fare sumptuously, the Bible says he fared sumptuously every day. Every single day, this fella ate well. Now, the word which is translated sumptuously is found only there in the New Testament. But it is a word which described luxury. When this fella bellied up to the meal table, he ate well. It wasn't something quick and fast and cheap and junk food, but he ate well. As we think about the food in our day and time, we still have, when it comes to food, a lot when it comes to luxury food. I did some looking this week, and we've looked at this sometimes in the past, but here are some new examples. Did you know that there is an extravagant burger that you can buy in New York for $295? Now, that's an expensive hamburger in my mind. But if you think that burger is expensive, there's another one which makes that one pale in comparison. Another shop will sell you a burger in New York for $666. So the next time you're in Burger King or McDonald's or wherever you're getting your burger, think back to tonight's lesson. There's another place in New York that sells bagels, and they offer a $1,000 bagel. Now that's beyond my ability to grasp. But you talk about luxurious food, you talk about expensive food, New York is one of the places that has it. Doing a little more looking, I found that there's a restaurant which offers a pizza for $2,400. Can you imagine a pizza costing more than $2,000? They'll sell you one. And as I did a little more looking, I found that there's a place they sell expensive hot dogs, $145 a pop. And if you go outside the U.S., there is a place in London that sells ham for $180 a pound. $180 a pound for ham. Physical food. It costs a lot sometimes. People will pay. They want luxury when it comes to food. And that luxury, that food, consumes many individuals. And it consumes people not only as they put it into their bodies, but it consumes people after it's in there. We find people consume with weight loss, diets. We put it in, and how do we get the calories out? How do we work it off? Well, before Jesus talked about the sumptuous food in Luke chapter 16, he had a little something to say if we back up a few chapters. In Luke chapter 12, verse 23, Jesus once again talks about food. But in Luke 12, verse 23, he makes a very important point. He says, for the life, your existence, as you're here in this earth, he says, for the life is more than the food, and the body more than raiment or clothing. I propose that what we have in Luke chapter 12, verse 23, is one of the most important verses we have anywhere in the New Testament, at least for some people. Jesus knew that there was luxurious food. He knew that that can be so important to so many people. But he said, as relevant as food is to our lives, life is more, far, far more about food. Isaiah made that point earlier, did he not? Isaiah 55, verse 1, come. You don't have any money, that's all right. You can eat. You can drink. And a few verses after Jesus spoke about food, Luke chapter 12, verse 33, if you drop down to verse 31, you have a related thought. In that 31st verse, he said, yet seek his kingdom, and these things shall be added unto you. When it comes to spiritual food, the Bible has some things to say about it. Two of the items that we find associated with this physical food are these. First, God offers it. We know that, Isaiah 55, verse 1. Jesus, the lady at the well, John chapter 4. Secondly, when we think about this spiritual food, Jesus himself is compared to food. Back in John chapter 6, verse 27, Jesus said, work for the food which abides into eternal life. The Lord recognized that there is spiritual food. Nothing wrong with physical food. Nothing wrong with good, healthy, nourishing physical food. But that should not be our consuming goal in life. God has given us access to the bread of life, John 6, verse 35. And Jesus said, I am that bread. The Lord said, if we're willing to eat of that bread, if we're willing to make him our spiritual food, we will not hunger. There is a spiritual part of man, which is just as important as the stomach, if not more so. And that spiritual part of man needs to be fed. It needs nourishment. And yet, as we look at society, there are some people, just as they might try to deny their body physical food, there are some individuals in life who would look at that spiritual component of their existence and say, well, I'm going to deny it. My spiritual part really does not need to be fed. Or they will put it on, if you will, a low-calorie diet and think, I don't need to put much in there, almost to the point of starvation. When it comes to spiritual food, it might not be a bad idea to look at it almost in terms of going to a buffet. A few days ago, I see his posts from time to time. I have a former teacher who does a good bit of posting on Facebook. And this brother, in this particular post, talked about the fact that he and his wife had recently gone to a buffet with friends. Well, nothing too odd about that. But I was intrigued by how he described that experience. He said, after my wife and I finished the meal, we waddled to the car. Now, I don't hear people use the word waddle too often, but I'm familiar with the word, and I think we all know what that means. And I thought, how interesting. Here's a fellow who was saying, apparently I like the food, but we waddled to the car. We ate our fill. Our stomachs were brimming full of food. Shouldn't that be our desire in the spiritual realm? We want to waddle. We want to make sure that we are spiritually full. We don't want to just get by. We don't want to just sort of make sure that we've got enough to barely survive. But we should have that desire to be spiritually full, whether a young person, someone who's been a Christian for a fair number of years, or someone who is perhaps in the later years of our Christian life. Maybe as we look at our life, we think, I don't have much time left on this earth. Still, even at that time in life, try to be spiritually full. We should have a desire to be spiritually fat. In another Old Testament book, the book of Jeremiah, chapter 15, verse 16, we find these words. Thy words were found. And the prophet said, I did eat them. Interesting that he uses the imagery of food. I did eat them. And the words were unto me a joy and the rejoicing of my heart. In 1 Corinthians 10, verses 3 and 4, Paul talked about spiritual food. Spiritual food, spiritual drink. Other verses, as we think about the New Testament, you may recall how New Testament writers talked about milk and meat. They use that analogy to once again describe spiritual nourishment. We know that an infant is not served turkey and ham and beans and steak a week after being born. When it comes to spiritual food, it operates in the same manner. After we become a Christian, if we did not have much religious training in the earlier years, we probably need milk. We need some basic, some fundamental, some foundational information when it comes to spiritual food. Ideally, we take that food, we ingest that food, we use that food, we grow spiritually. And as the years pass, we are able to process greater and greater Bible truths. Recently, at the last preacher's meeting in our area, I heard about a scheme. This is being practiced by some preachers down south. Now, I have no personal knowledge of this. This was something that was simply related by one of the men who was present. But as he described, as he outlined the scheme, it works like this. In a community with multiple congregations, there are three preachers who decide that they are going to work together. Each of these men decides to resign on a certain Sunday. That's all planned out. And there's a man who, we'll call him Person A, is going to resign. Person B says, I'd like your job, and we'll end up just hopefully switching pulpits. So shortly after Person A resigns, a resume arrives in the mail from Preacher B. And men hope to go to a new congregation. The three hope to rotate, if you will. And with that rotation, they hope to use all their old sermons. And because they're going to a new congregation, get a big raise in the process. Each can work with a new congregation. Each can keep their house. They don't have to move physically. And they can make a financial killing. They can also study a whole lot less, because they're doing that every two or so years. And then after they work with those other two preachers, they can find some other preachers, assuming that they're in a large city, we have multiple congregations, and just repeat that cycle again and again and again. Now, the spiritual food that's being offered by those fellows may not be stale, but would you not say it at least qualifies as leftovers? I would. God cares about the spiritual food that we eat. But you know, some people really don't care all that much when it comes to the spiritual side of life. Sometimes even when we look at preachers. Most of us, as we've gone into the grocery store, maybe we had difficulty getting around someone because that person was trying to read the label. Maybe they were over in the dairy aisle, or maybe they were in the vegetable aisle, or wherever they were. Maybe they were in the potato chip aisle. And they were trying to read the label very carefully on a certain grocery item. But imagine, if you will, a different scenario. You go into the store tonight after services, or maybe sometime this week, and you find this consumer who, at least you get the sense, is trying to buy their groceries just based on how things look. They go down one aisle and they see some pretty boxes. Well, that's a nice box and I'm going to take that home. They're not concerned about what's inside. They're not concerned about the price, but it's just the box looks nice. Or maybe they've listened to TV and the radio and there is this fabulous jingle. And they, as they're moving down the grocery aisles, they see this grocery item which has been advertised with this jingle, and they think, that is so cool. I love the jingle. The food must be good. I'm going to take that item home with me. Now, I propose that that would be absolutely unthinkable in the physical realm. But when we deal with the spiritual realm, is that really not what we find? It is. There are people who investigate a religious group not because of truth, not because of the spiritual food that's there, but because of the building. Have you ever known of somebody who said, we go to that religious group because it's close to our house? I have. Or this jewel. Somebody says, we go to that religious group because we like the structure. It's such a pretty building and we go there. Really? Would you buy your food that way? Just because the box or the can looks attractive? Or somebody says, the singing is so attractive there. The people are so friendly. Would you buy your groceries? With similar criteria. Some would say, my friends worship at that group. Or the preacher is so friendly. They have so many activities. They have so many young people. People make decisions about spiritual food, which they would never in a million years tolerate when it comes to the physical nourishment that they put in their body. I've not seen it. But I did some reading about it. Back in 2004, a documentary was released. And I love the name of the documentary. It supersized me. And you'll understand the reason for that in just a moment. From February 1st, 2003, to March 2nd of that year, there was a man who decided that he was not going to eat anything but food from McDonald's. And you can read about that a little more online if you want. And supposedly this fellow went to that aforementioned restaurant three times a day. And that was all he ate. Over this approximately month period, he ate every item from McDonald's menu at least once. From the reports about this 32-year-old man, so I mean it's not like he's 75 or 90, he gained over that basically 30-day period 24 pounds. He increased, as far as his body mass, 13%. His cholesterol showed a definite increase. He developed mood swings, didn't have those before. Sexual dysfunction became a problem, and there was noticeable fat accumulation in his liver. It took this fella 14 months to lose the weight that he gained over that 30-day period. And that was with a supervised vegan diet. Now we can look at this man and say, oh, you should have known better. 30 days at McDonald's, 3 meals a day. What were you thinking? Putting all that unhealthy food into your body. You should have known that it was bad. Well, yeah, we can fault him for that. But are there not people who are just as guilty when it comes to the spiritual realm? And they do it not for a month, not for 2 months, not for a year, not for 10 years, but they do it for decades and then expect that they're going to fare well with God. We have a society of people right now who love spiritual junk food. Some of that spiritual junk food comes from the let's get it quick mentality. We don't have time to study. We're busy with this, we're busy with that, and we just want it fast. Make it quick. Others really don't care what they hear, what they get, as long as they enjoy the atmosphere. And I've had people tell me that. I just love it so much there. The music, the people, the building, whatever it might be. When it comes to spiritual junk food, God gives us some warnings. Do you remember from 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1, Paul talked about the doctrines of demons? That's what some people have for their spiritual food. Spiritual junk food sometimes comes through translations. The dumbing down of Christians, which is a big problem in America right now, is tied to spiritual junk food. We're in a time where many prefer the works of men rather than the Word of God. Others will take the words of men in written form, or perhaps from the pulpit, or Bible class teaching setting, than what we find in Scripture. Spiritual junk food allows people to be filled with all kinds of religious error. Some junk food in the religious realm, go to McDonald's from time to time, it's not going to perhaps hurt you that much. It's certainly probably not going to kill you. But in the spiritual realm, it's deadly. It has consequences for us individually. It has consequences for us within our families. It has consequences in our local congregations and even beyond. Junk food is often disguised. As you look at the boxes, it may look good. They put nice labels. They package it in some great ways. Rotten spiritual food is also disguised, and it's disguised well. The one who's doing the hiding is the devil. Satan would like to fill our minds with error, junk food, spiritual waste. And he'll do that if we let him. Spiritual food, just as we make choices about our physical food, we make choices about the spiritual food. And we do that every single day. What are we choosing? That's the question that we're asking as we stand and sing.